Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome again to Woo's Den. And we got a good show for you tonight. We've got Dave from Texas stopping by. No real set topic, but we're just going to sort of shoot the shit and have a bit of a general show. And Dave, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Am I coming through okay?
Loud and clear. 10-4, good
right.
Buddy.
Thanks. Last night didn't go too smooth, so I was concerned about tonight, but we're good. Okay.
Yeah, with that, Skype just does that sometimes. Sometimes you just need to, like, reconnect, and it works, right?
Didn't work when I tried that last night. But
yeah,
we're
sometimes
here.
Still does that.
We're here tonight, so.
All right, seems good so far. Yeah, so I guess I'll just go with the schedule. It's... by the way, April 10th, 2013, and listening to Renegade Broadcasting. The lineup is as follows. As of today, we have Kyle Blitzkrieg broadcast on Mondays, Wildcard Tuesday on... I might as well make an announcement. It looks like we're going to have Dana from Truth Militia. Looks like he'll be coming in next week in that slot. So look forward to that. We got me on Wednesdays. the Sledgehammer on Thursdays, and our friend Siegfried, he's on now, and welcome to him starting week after next. And Roundtable on Saturdays, and our guest here on Sundays. And Dave, where do you want to get started off? Well, first of all, I had a question in the chat earlier. Just wondering what your take on was some of the issues brought up by your friend who called in last week on the show.
Okay. What in particular?
Well, I forget his exact question. It was up there. Well, just to expand on that, like, what do you think of the issue with the militias? What do you think about things of this nature?
Well, the militias in general, I think most of them are serious about what's going on. I mean, I can't know from sure. I'm not in one, but from what I've seen, I think they're willing to stand up and fight if necessary. Hopefully, it wouldn't come to that, but you can you never know what's going to happen here in the near future. As far as what's going on in the government, the only thing he didn't discuss that I would have liked to have gotten him to elaborate on was the issue of whether or not, if there was going to be any sort of a war going on in the government, what exactly would happen? You know, would there be shootouts, or would there be real battles, or would this just be, you know, enough people just stepping into the right spots at the right time and saying, okay, we've won, this is our government now, whether you like it or not, or just what, you know. Maybe we can get him on again at some point and get him to elaborate on that a little further. I think that would really be interesting. Eric's a pretty amazing guy. He's got some pretty good insights, and, you know, he spends a lot of time just thinking about stuff, and he has time to do that, and so that comes out whenever we have discussions on certain topics between he and I. And again I hope to be able to get him on here again at some point, but we'll see. I don't want to count any chickens before they hatch, but if we could get him on to do maybe a twice a month show, that would really be cool. I think he's got some great things to talk about.
Yeah, and we can always, since we have, like, sort of brand, our schedule's pretty full. But, I mean, we can always bring him on as a guest, or we can do special reports, sort of like with, Sledge does.
Well, now, is Dana going to be a regular?
Yeah, it looks like he'll be filling in then.
Okay, well, maybe I could work something out with my time slot, and he and I can come on together, or he can fill in for me occasionally or something. We'll work it out. We'll see.
Yeah, there's always times when someone can't fill a slot either, or maybe I can bring him on. Like, I have him on. I've been chatting with him the last couple of days a bit, too. So,
all right, good.
I can always bring him on, too, or whatever.
Excellent. Sounds good.
All right, yeah, and if there were some sort of internal struggle, I don't think we in the public would really know about it. Like, look what happened with SEAL Team 6, right? You don't hear anything about that, and it would just be something that would be the first thing covered up, because we know who the side of the media is on, right?
Yeah, that's true. However, if the patriotic side wins, that's what I'm concerned about as far as hearing what's going on. You know, obviously, if there was some battle going on and the Israeli side remained as is, then, you know, they may hush it up so nobody else would know what's going on, and they certainly wouldn't want the public to think that the government has gotten out of control in any way, shape, or form. That's not to their advantage. You know, they don't want a situation where it was like in the Bolshevik Revolution, where Lenin stated the power was just laying in the streets, and all somebody needed to do was just go pick it up and run with it. So, You know, it's hard to say. I'd really love to get his take on it, though. So.
Right, and that's a big issue, too. Like, we need to have that sort of militia presence on the, you know, boots on the ground, our boots on the ground to sort of support something like that, right? And,
yeah.
I mean, as technology moves forward, I mean, even just having the capability to do so, would mean like they wouldn't want to move forward. That's why they want to take away the guns, right? But as we move forward, we see new technologies spring up that are very interesting. For example, if you have a 3D printer, you have a firearm. And I recently, the Navy just put up a demonstration about those new lasers they're putting up on the Navy vessels. The interesting thing about them, while they are pretty complicated to make now, in the future, I mean, it might not be too difficult for a plucky engineer to sort of replicate these devices. And then that sort of takes down their air superiority factor down a little bit, at least their drone superiority factor.
Well, you're talking about something I really don't know anything about, so I'll have to take your word for it on that. I don't follow that kind of stuff very
closely.
Yeah,
these are basically just solid-state lasers. Pretty high-tech as of right now. But, I mean, these things will shoot through drones like a knife through butter, right? So it's something I'm following now.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I sure don't like the idea of drones overhead. You know, that bothers me. Now, I have not actually seen one yet, but I think where I live that it might be a little harder to do to have one directly over where I live in particular, simply because I'm in a flight path of two airports, one north of me and one south of me. Both of them are major international airports, too, so... I would have to probably go to somewhere else in town, spend a little time there before I would be aware of one over my head. So,
right. Well, I think the drones are more for middle America, if you think about it, because they'd already have similar capabilities in the big cities as drones are, right, as far as surveillance and things of that nature go, right?
Well, that's what I hear.
Just taking a drink of water there. So, anything else of this nature you want to get into?
No, not in particular. I think this area is better, honestly, better left to discuss with someone like Eric. And, you know, you and Kyle were doing a good job of it. But this is just not something that I tend to keep up with. Between my work and keeping up with these shows and anything I send out to my email list and any other whatever time left social issues I have, my time is taken up. So,
but right, maybe I'll get him on again sometime and try to get into these issues a little more. A little more completely, anyway. So what else should we get into here?
Well, take your pick. You know, obviously, if it's a subject that I feel comfortable about discussing, the better. You know, we could talk about some of these religious issues. I would like to say one thing. You know, Kyle did an interview with, what was that guy's name here last Monday?
Kai Merles.
Yeah, and something he discussed in there about, you know, what sounded like still being friendly towards, Christianity in a sense, and I personally disagree with that. I think we need to target it.
I tend to agree with that as well.
Christianity is on its last leg, and it's fixing to fall real fast, and if you heard anything that I played on my show last night, you can see that it's not going to be in the future. You know, it's past, and so we need to keep focused on what's forward, and don't let anything from the past that's negative can creep into our future.
Right, and like we need to be coming from a place of truth, not a place of faith.
Exactly,
and like we need to not have convictions but we need to exude conviction.
Yes, agreed. Yeah, we have to walk the walk and talk the talk.
Right, and like even back, people always love to throw up the archetype of Germany. But that's when it was a lot stronger 60 years ago. It is a lot weaker now, because like, and it is bad with all the Christian Zionism, but this is sort of like a death knell, I see, because like they need to pump up like apocalyptic rhetoric 24/7 to keep this boat afloat.
Yeah, and I don't think that would actually keep it afloat either. I think it's just it's too far gone. Too many people have available to them information now that they can just easily look up, and if they have any sort of a critical mind whatsoever, you know, there's just no real reason anymore for anybody to even actually believe any of this stuff. To me, the only people really who have any true conviction towards any of this is a large fraction of the population or the elderly. Most of the younger people they know something's not right, at the very least. Okay, and a lot of them have been exposed to things over the net. I mean, every one of them have seen Zeitgeist, and I'm not advocating saying that's good, but there's information in there that it makes them question. And most of them that I've talked to, younger people, they've seen that. And they've so they're fully aware that something isn't going, something isn't right, and they need to be looking elsewhere for some sort of a spiritual guide.
Right, and I do think we need something new, and it's sort of better that way, because like they run all these algorithms, all these studies and stuff like this, and like they've got all the Christianity algorithms down to a T. And, like, even so, they talk about like, communism, and basically it's the same thing as Christianity if you replace God with state.
Sure.
But, I mean, I think that sort of came up as a response to, like, they study the astrology, right?
Yeah.
And they know it's coming.
Yep.
And, you know, they see... they saw that like it was going to start to crumble, so they needed to make like a safety net, right?
Sure, a substitute. And it's not hard to progress Christians into the direction of communism as a mindset. There just needs to be some sort of an event that makes them all of a sudden realize that this is not correct. And if you go back to the first show that I did on political Judaism, you know, it brought up the issue of an antichrist, and all of a sudden Christians would realize that, hey, their religion is bogus, and then they look to the Jews. But and that's, I think, what they have in mind, myself. But I think that would probably only work for Christian Zionists. Anyone who is still stuck in that mindset or mode would fall for something like that. I don't think anybody else with any lick of sense would continue to follow in that sort of a path.
You know, yeah, and that's sort of why they're going full retard with this now, right?
Probably, yeah. You know, there's no telling what they're actually thinking about things and what they have in mind. You know, we can only guess. But, you know, we do have a sort of a guide for their playbook. And, they'll deviate from it when they have to. You know, that playbook is not set in stone. And
this is something what Eric said too, like they want Israel to be the superpower. And this looks like what they're doing if they sort of look at it, right? They're making all these drone armies. You know, they're building themselves up. They think they can be this. Like, and part of their problem is their pride. And that they think that they're infallible.
That's true, and as we've discussed before, they always have always in the past fallen flat on their face every time they've made this dash to the finish line, and usually they trip on something. And I think they're going to try and make sure they have all their ducks in a row this time. But the big factor is us. And they may underestimate us in a lot of respects, but we have to make sure that we're on top of our game at all times to make sure that we cover our bases as well. And we'll just have to see what happens.
Right, and we have to go above and beyond, right? And that's another problem with this Christianity. Like, people say it's like embraces poverty and weakness. And this is partially why they're so successful, right?
Yeah, well, what they've done in particular to most of the Western countries is they've brought in the dregs of society from other countries, and so that forces our culture down to a lower level, and even our laws have to wind up being written for the lowest common denominator. You know, it's like, well, it limits our freedom, put it that way, because, you know, when you have to start writing laws for the lowest common denominator, it's always going to put a limit on freedom for those of us who are more responsible, more aware, more intelligent, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and if you look at functional republics, like, say, Rome, Greece, and early America, when those worked, you would see that normally they would elect someone already from the sort of quote-unquote
aristocracy.
Yeah, back when there really was one. And they like the smartest or best one, or a regular guy who was exceptionally intelligent, like a great inventor or something like this.
Well, Thomas Jefferson said that our republic would only work as long as we have an informed and educated public to help prop it up. And what's happened is that part of the public has become apathetic, and or brainwashed, or both. And we cannot function at any higher level until something changes. And now what that is, I'm not sure. But
right. And another thing about that is, like, it's easy for the mass of people to have different likes, different visions of how they would see they want to run things. And it's always going to be like that. But when you have a great misconception, I mean, it's much easier to rein that in if you're trying to control things, you know what I mean? Like, the greatest lie, right? Or the biggest misconception can trump the greatest ideals easily if you're able to set that up properly.
Yeah, and if you have a media pushing the agenda, that's certainly easier to do. Now, another thing Thomas Jefferson said was that when you start letting people come into your country who are not like you, they'll start steering your country in a different direction. And what we see happening here is blatantly clear. And, you know, I'll give you an example of that, too, and people are just so misguided. I was watching on YouTube last night a video of an astrologer, and he was talking about Pluto transiting Capricorn. And one of the things that he brought up pretty quickly regarding the American Revolution was how this country was trying to set a constitution to have multiple races here, and that had never been done before. And you know, that's just an outright total bullshit lie. So either the guy was just either misinformed, or he was pushing an agenda, one of the two. But anyway, I wrote in the comments below the video that he was a commie, and I haven't heard anything back. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure there was nothing in there like that. Nor does those transit really even seem to say that itself. You know what I mean?
Well, the transit would indicate the what we're trying to do, and there's nothing certainly in any of our founding documents that would indicate that either. You know, the American Indians were not considered citizens. Slaves were not considered citizens. In fact, they weren't even considered fully human in that respect, if you look at it as a matter of fact thing. And, you know, and you look at people who could vote at the time of the creation of this country, and only land-owning white males over the age of 21 were allowed to even vote. And it wasn't until the time of Andrew Jackson that the typical white male would be able to vote whether he owned land or not. He still had to be at least 21 to vote, I believe. But, you know, that's a perfect example. And either people are just ignorant or they're pushing an agenda, one of the two.
You should at least have to pass the test. I mean, come on. Like,
oh, I agree.
People who can, like, drive a car, can't drive a car, and they can vote, right? You know, it's ridiculous. Like, Obama phone lady can vote.
Yeah.
And all these other people, right?
I think there should be some sort of a competency test, but, you know, they as long as they're in control, that's never going to happen, and as long as they control the voting machines, that's never going to happen either because they don't see a need for it. So, but, you know, a long time ago when I was young, I was thinking about stuff like this. That was one of the first things in my mind that came up is you need to be able to pass some sort of a competency test to be able to vote. I mean, how should anybody be allowed to vote who does not have any comprehension or the ability to comprehend the issues at hand? And then again, the problem that would exist if that's the case now is that even if they did come up with a competency test, you still have problems with the information being controlled and people being brainwashed and basing everything on these other ideas that are just not true. Just like that astrologer suggesting that this country was designed to be multicultural. It's crock of shit.
Yeah, well, they put a lot more effort into brainwashing the more intelligent people. I mean, if you're going to the university level, the complexity of the liberal brainwashing is astounding.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine if you went and walked into just a regular class, you'd probably laugh. But if you put yourself into someone's shoes and never thought about these things before, you can sort of see how they could get them with it. But it's a lot more complex than this... than the biggest lie over and over method that was just a big television.
That's true. Now, if I didn't go to college, and if I had gone even at that time, which would have been in, say, very late 70s, early 80s, you know, say age 19 through 22 to 23, somewhere in there, they still would have wound up kicking me out of school because I already at that time knew too much. You know, I was arguing with my teachers in high school until I just gave up and just said, fuck it, I'm just going to smoke a joint and go to sleep in class. So.
Yeah, I did the same thing, but I'm going back now to get some technical trade stuff. But there's one English professor, I just try not to go to that class, but it's only like an essay writing class. Like, that's the only Marxist class I'll have to take, really. The rest is just like math and science, right?
Well, you know, just for the fun of it, you ought to confront him on some issue that comes up. Make it something really important, though, when you do it. But, you know, I would confront these people, though, myself. You know, I don't like just sitting back and just taking what anyone has to say on something that I know is what they're telling me is just wrong, you know. And what it does, too, is it the other people around you hear the confrontation. And perhaps it might spur them on to analyze it and think a little bit for themselves, you know. So, but you have to be certainly the way you go about doing it would make a difference. You don't want to be
But it's an ethnic class, right? So, and he could just he could fail because he wanted to because it's subjective. So,
right, okay,
that'd be sneaky. I tried to sneak some stuff into the essays, but I still destroyed. I just sound like a fuddy-duddy conservative, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I will.
Well, anyway. But, I never could have gone to college. There's just no way I could have done that. And I already had kind of figured out that it was a scam as well because of the cost of it. You know, I look back, but back then, I talked to my father about it, and you know, my father had two degrees. He had a degree in structural engineering and a degree in architecture, and he went to school right after World War II. He had gotten drafted for World War II, and right out when he got out of boot camp, they were going to send him to Europe, but then the war ended, and so you know, he spent the rest of his time in the service behind a desk. And then when he got out, he went back to college. He lost his scholarships from when he went into the service. But you know, he paid for his own school and was able to get two degrees, and he was able to do it by a summer job. And he didn't even really have to do much during the school year itself. And so he you look at the cost of education then compared to what it is now as well, it was, there's just no way. And so I just said, no, I'm not going through that. I'm not putting myself into this kind of debt. And you look at what it costs now to go to school, it's just nuts.
Yeah, so. It's pretty insane. If the money wasn't in engineering in Canada, I wouldn't have ever even went, right? Probably would have got like a basic trade. I sort of need to do this to make a lot of money because I'm already 27 now and I got really no savings, so
don't feel bad. You're not the only one in those kind of shoes. There's a hell of a lot of other people that are in that boat as well, and they're older than you are too. So, but you know, the other bad thing about that too is spending all that kind of money on pure indoctrination. I mean, you're getting some kind of skills out of it, hopefully, depending on what class you're taking, but. You know, it's just not worth it, in my opinion, unless you're going to become a doctor, an attorney, or something that just absolutely requires you have some kind of licensing and a degree. Well, then, you know.
Well, even that requires a lot of indoctrination. I think, like, a lot of the, lawyer training, it doesn't fill you with a sense of justice, right? It tries to make, just the way the curriculums are built, they try to make you the most, like, person most devoid of empathy that could exist. That's the way it'll be set up, right?
Yeah.
Same with doctors. And like the way with medicine, like it's trash, right? You know, it's far beyond what it could be.
Right, yeah. I mean, there are aspects that are good. Certainly, someone who's a surgeon, you know, is getting some good training, but the rest of it is, right? And the sad part, too, about like an attorney, first of all, it's all profit motive driven. And so that's number one. Number two, for attorneys in particular, they don't really study anything to do with constitutional law, at least in this country, they don't. It's all case law.
Right.
So. But that's just those two professions in particular. But, you know, it's going to deviate depending on what it is you're trying to do, obviously.
Right. Even with the sciences, I mean, they really went to town on the sciences as well with promoting like Einstein. I've talked about him before. Basically, what Einstein did was rip off two electrical engineers.
Right.
And they took, like, all the meaning out of their work. And he slapped his face on it, right? And,
yeah. Two white guys.
Yeah. It was a Scotsman and
I don't
Italian
remember.
Or Frenchman, Poincaré and Lorentz, anyway.
Yeah.
But, it's completely ridiculous. Like,
well, let's say it's
but
got
like,
so much
that,
dogma.
That's why science wasn't able to go anywhere, right? And the Germans were like, they advanced so quickly with science. And it was like, people asked them about it. And they're like, oh, we don't follow Jewish physics.
Yeah. Well, science has become so dogmatic, it's like religion in a sense. If you don't accept our theories or our philosophies or our what we call our laws, then, you know, you're out of the picture. And that's very unfortunate because it's, for example, I think they pretty much put Carl Sagan up there to destroy Emanuel Velikovsky,
right.
If you know who he is. So I think he wrote several books. One of them is Ages and Chaos. And
yeah, he talked about
the
electric universe theory.
Yeah.
Why? And
all sorts of different things. Okay. And so you got people like Carl Sagan, you know, and you ought to hear him talk about astrology, you know. So.
I can't remember any exact points on this, but he actually infused a lot of Talmudic theory, like from Talmudic creation theories,
yeah,
into like what he talked about.
Well, now is he Jewish or
oh,
was
yeah.
Jewish? He's died. Yeah, he's dead now. So, but
yeah, he's Jewish.
Okay. Well, that explains a lot of things there.
And like, I mean, he was just like I don't even think he was a real scientist. I think they just sort of put him on TV all the time. And, he was on all of like the Johnny Carson's or whatever the late night shows were on at his time, right?
Yeah, well, like I said, I think they put him out there to discredit Velikovsky, so that would fall into line with what I was saying right there. So, But you know, I don't know a hell of a lot about him other than some of his theories about some things, and you know, who he was pit against to destroy, and some of his ideas on astrology. I just didn't have that much respect for him. I bought one book, started reading a little bit of it, set it down, never picked it up again.
Yeah, I watched. I couldn't make it through Cosmos either. I just like, really?
I think that's the one I bought.
Yeah, no, this is the documentary series I was talking about. But it's the same thing with the religion, right? Because they want to keep people down as much as possible. They want to give people theories that don't work.
Well, on top of that, what you're seeing too is a degradation of everything else outside of what they want you to think. You know, if you look at the Norse gods, they're turning them into movies and games and anything that, you know, would be considered degenerate if you tried to impose it upon Yahweh or Jehovah, you know. And so it's you don't see a game about Yahweh, do you? You know, but you do about Thor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing that they're doing right now. And I think that's they're trying to head us off at the pass by doing those sort of things.
Right,
they're
trying
to implant that in people's minds.
Yeah, but this is another thing, too, because they know these things are becoming increasingly popular. Because I remember in, like around, like, when The Matrix came out, and people were like, oh, this is going to be all these it's all going to be all futuristic movies now, and it's all going to be this, like, space punk sort of culture. But what did everyone turn to? They turned to all the... They wanted to read all about the old sort of paganist shows like Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, even Harry Potter.
Yeah.
This is what they want. This is what they want to see. Even some of the vampire stuff. But they want all these old legends and stuff. Like people are craving for it. It's pretty interesting to see, really. But they're really they're sensing that people are going to have this drive to return to these sort of things.
Well, you're probably right. I only saw the first Matrix movie. I didn't see any of the others. Aren't there three of them total or something like that?
Yeah, they're all crap anyway.
Okay, yeah, I agree. But I saw the first one. I went with some of my friends that I kind of hung out with at Starbucks. We didn't have anything to do one night, and so I went with them to the movie and saw it. And what caught my attention more than anything else was the reference to Zion in there. And it's like, what are they trying to push here, you know? And so anyway, I never bothered to see any of the rest of the movies. And so,
they actually ripped that off from some woman who wrote it, and it was actually originally based on Gnosticism.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you can see it because it's the machine god, right?
Oh, okay,
because
the
machines were actually originally supposed to represent Yahweh, because in Gnostic theology, Yahweh is a sort of cyborg apparition who isn't really God, but he just goes around and perverts everything. But they went and inverted that and made their movie about it in Zion, when actually it couldn't be farther from the truth.
Yeah, I just kind of lost interest in The Matrix. I mean, I thought some of the special effects were good, but it's like, you know, there's not enough here to hold my attention. And so to me, it's just, you know, after a while, you've seen enough of these sci-fi things, you just start equating them as being all the same. You know, okay, one movie comes out that's got some special effects, and you watch it, and then you wait for the next phase of special effects to come out. And so that was my view on it. I saw it from a sci-fi point of view. So
yeah, and it's all parlor tricks. But then again, there is another new movie coming out too. It's called like Oblivion, and it has like Tom Cruise, and there was like a war with the aliens, and he goes back and he's trying to because Earth got wrecked, so he's going around doing drones, like fixing drones and stuff. But like the twist is, sorry if I'm spoiling this, but you shouldn't be watching movies anyway. But the twist is like the aliens actually won, and like he thinks that the humans wanted this, and that's sort of the same plot as The Matrix. But I mean, they always seem to want to be these. They always cast themselves as the villains. Like even like with the machines is like the thing is the machines always won, even though the good guy thought he won, right?
Yeah.
And there is also this theme as well, because I think even in like a lot of comic books and stuff, you see like Superman, like the Ubermensch, and you see Lex Luthor, he's just a guy, but he's a rich guy, but he contends with the Ubermensch, and they always get away and all this. So I think they do sort of revel in putting themselves in this role.
Yeah.
It's a constant thing, even with all these newer movies coming out, Lord of the Rings and stuff. Like they put that out, and you have these sort of a lot of the villains are sort of Jewish caricatures as well.
Yeah, that's what it seems to me to be. I think you nailed it there. So, my thoughts on most movies nowadays is that for the most part they really, you know, there's a rarity that something's going to appeal to me. However, I did like the Lord of the Rings series. I didn't read any of J.R.R. Tolkien's books, but I had a teacher who was really big on that when I was in high school, but I just couldn't get into it at the time. But, you know, I never really read the books, and so I don't know how close they were to the books. But I will say one thing. What I get from those movies in particular was that it offered white people a chance to finally have something that could appeal to us. And I don't know who produced them, who was behind them. You know, I'm sure that Jews were involved somehow. They always are. And they have to make sure it's not going to go overboard. But there were messages from that movie. You know, you saw the hordes of the aliens, so to speak. The non-whites attacking the good guys, white guys. And so, you know, there were some messages in there. And if you look at some of the things in there from an occult perspective, you know, you had the ability of using the chi energy. You had the electricity coming from the fingers of, what was his name, the wizard?
Yeah, Gandalf.
Yeah, Gandalf. So, I mean, there were some things in there, but most people are not going to pick up on that.
You know what
that,
it might actually be is sort of a pressure relief valve, just like a Ron Paul, because these all came out during the early stages of the current warfare phase that we've been going through, right?
Yeah, that's probably a good analysis there. You probably nailed it on the head there. It you know, they have to probably do that every once in a while. It's like, okay, we got to give these people something, you know, every once in a while just to keep them from getting too far, you know, against us, or, you know, and also, too, they got to keep the money coming in. You know, if white people stop going to movies, what's going to happen, right? So, you know.
Right. And they've been declining for a while because what we need, we don't need a fucking movie. We don't need a libertarian. You know, we need something that we build at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, the National Socialists put out some of their own films, too. And, I mean, we're not capable of doing something like that at this point. We don't have the money to do it. But, you know, if we ever got to a point where we did, I think that's something that we should do, you know. But I don't know how that would relate. We have to look at it to the bigger picture at the time. So... But, you know, it's, you know, as far as movies in general go, I do like a lot of, you know, I wouldn't say a lot. There are some movies that I do like, and it really needs to be topical, you know, for me to be interested in it. And
yeah, I rarely watch them myself anymore. I've got Michael Collins here, a Michael Collins movie here that I might watch the next day or two. But,
yeah.
I mean, I rarely watch movies. I might watch one like once a month or something.
Well, I don't even do that. Not anymore.
Yeah, I'm probably overshooting it. Like what?
When I had a regular girlfriend, she would come over sometimes and bring a video and say, "Let's watch this." And I would look at it and go, "Do you really want to watch this?" And, you know, yeah, sure, let's look at it. And every once in a while, it will surprise me, and it would be better than I expected, you know. But for the most part, it's just all rehash of the same crap over and over again. They've run out of plots, so.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat. I just get bored to friggin' tears when I try to watch these things, man. It's just, I don't get it at all.
Well, if there's a female involved with you in your life, then sometimes you got to make exceptions.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing. Unfortunately, that keeps it going. And I think these things are crafted to appeal more to women in a lot of ways.
Well, true. And they know that if they can appeal to the women, they will bring the men in as well. Because if the man is just not interested in it, well, you know, it ain't nobody going to go see it unless it appeals to the woman.
Yeah, it's drama, right? You know, women
right.
are led more by emotion than logic, and men vice versa. So.
Yeah, it's just like
the good and bad thing, but it is as it is.
It's just like the analogy between watching television, or not between watching television, but watching television. You know, the man will sit there with the remote control and just sit there and go through every channel trying to see what's on. Woman will go through it a little ways, find something that looks interesting, and will stop, won't go any further, and she'll sit there and watch the rest of it. So, you know, we're two different animals for a reason there, and they try to appeal to that, to the females as much as possible. And again, they have to bring the females in to bring the men in a lot of instances. But it depends on what you're talking about. You know, men are most men are into this. To these action movies, and they want to see buildings being blown up. They want to see car crashes. They want to see all sorts of spectacular special effects. And you know, the women are not necessarily into that. And so, you know, they've got two categories going. But you follow what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely.
But anyway, I don't know how we got to this point with movies.
Yeah, It's not my best topic. I can't say I'm too up on them.
Me either. But, you know, isn't there another movie coming out along the lines of Lord of the Rings at some point here in the future? Didn't I hear something recently about that? Maybe it was one aspect of some that didn't get covered. Yeah,
yeah, there's a prequel, like The Hobbit, that they're putting out. It's originally it was like one book, but they split it up into three movies.
Okay.
It didn't really get reviewed that well or anything like that.
Well, you know, they probably have already done the best parts first, and that's why they did what they did, and this is just something left over. And, again, they've run out of stuff to do, and so that's probably why they're going to do one on The Hobbit then. And hopefully it'll be okay. We'll see. You know, maybe it'll bring the white people around a little bit. You never know. Every once in a while they do stuff that backfires on them. You know, they'll do something and they don't get the response that they anticipate, and then they have to do damage control to compensate. So you know, we'll see. You know, it's just kind of like Mel Gibson's movie on what was that movie that he did on Jesus Christ or whatever it was called. I don't know what it was. You know, the Jews kept coming out and saying, "Oh, this is anti-Semitic," but people went to the theaters in droves to see it, right? So, you know, they do things that backfire every once in a while.
Yeah, and I think there's a little more to that, too, because they want to keep themselves as the pariahs in a certain extent. They don't want themselves to intermingle or intermix. Right? And maybe they're saying something with this, because they were going to try to get Gibson to do a movie on the Maccabees, right?
Well, really?
What happened during the Maccabees is that the Jews got too integrated with Greek society.
Right.
So the more fanatic Jews actually instigated a civil war in Greece through terrorist actions.
Right. Yeah, they hated Greek culture. They couldn't stand, you know, anything to do with Europeans whatsoever. Is, you know, and if you look at the Maccabee Revolt, and if you've ever, I don't know if you had a chance yet to read Joseph Atwell's book on Christianity, That's one that I've brought up before, and I think most people ought to read it if they have any inclination to learn about Christianity, because he takes the Maccabee Revolt and demonstrates how that relates to the story of Christianity. And so I thought I'd mention that since you brought that up. But yeah, that's they hated Greek culture.
Right, and even still, I think I see like Christianity is actually more akin to the more like radical sects of Judaism, because it's this whole like messianic, crazy like anti-life sort of mentality, right?
Well, yeah, they merged something that would appeal to Gentiles. That is buried in their psyches, and you know the myth of the resurrected man is just so common amongst Gentile cultures that they were able to try and merge it with a Jewish Messiah, that and then turn it around as having rejected him, and use that to come up with their religion. Actually, that was a damn good ploy on their part. I mean, it's lasted 2,000 years. They did a good job, but they had to foist it on everybody for it to happen. But you know, once it sunk in, the people accepted it. So,
right.
You know,
and another thing is like a lot of like these other characters, the resurrected heroes, were sort of heroic figures and sort of the conquering hero, right? And
yeah,
it was more of a character to sort of emulate. And but like the way they set it up, it's like, oh, the savior, and you've got to like pray to the savior, and like through the savior you can be blessed, but you need to be like, you can't emulate it by trying to be a better person in a sense, but you need to do it by being meek and not trying to better yourself at all, but trying to just keep your nose down, your hands in your pocket, mope around until you die, and then you know, and you have to be like totally divorced from the earth. Like it's sort of this sterile, like transhumanist ideal, right?
Sky God.
Yeah.
And if you fuck with the bankers, see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point too. But even still, though, like the story about him chasing the moneylenders out of the temple.
Yeah, that's
it
what
wasn't
I meant.
Because they were being using usury. It's because they weren't using shekels.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But no, most people don't catch that.
Yeah.
So.
No, but like this is another thing they like to push with the truth movement. They try to make it this whole Christian thing because that benefits their apocalyptic mindset. Because then they can put all these movies about, oh, Obama's the Antichrist and all this stuff, and it just whips people up in this apocalyptic fervor, and like, yeah, we're going to go die for Israel, as conspiracy theories told us to. And even the phrase conspiracy theory was originally made by a Jew to this sort of Antifa Jew. I forget his name exactly, but it was sort of this Antifa guy, like, who talked about like fascist, like this sort of Abby Hoffman type character, right?
Right, right. Yeah, you prop them up a little bit, and then you start getting a following, and you know, so that's what happened with Abby Hoffman. So, you know, they gave him media attention. See, so you know, everybody sees it on TV and says, "Oh, I want to be part of this." You know, so and there you have it. But
like they think they're fighting the status quo, but they are the status quo. That's what bothers me most about them. It's hypocritical.
Well,
and
people are attracted to an underdog too.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean,
but you know, it's just more mind manipulation, more psychology, more propaganda, more fill in the blanks. You know, so. But anyway, are we going to take calls tonight?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I forgot to give out the call numbers. In the second hour, we'll open up the phone boards. So if you want to call in, it's 347 633-9657. And I'll post that in the chat as well. So that's 347-633-9657. And do you want to take a quick break? Well, I'm just going to find a song here first.
Yeah, I need to go to the restroom, so.
All right, let's play some, what's good here? Any requests?
You select something that you like.
Yeah, I'll get something here. Let's play Rotus again. Oops. One second. All right, I don't have that on here. Wait.
You can play one of those ones I got up there if you want.
There's one I wanted to play, but I can't find it. Oh, well. I'll play something else, whatever comes up here. Professional radio, folks.
Hey, it works, right?
Yeah, it gets the job done.
As long as we get the information out there, that's what matters.
Yeah, and we are. I just uploaded that the other day. I can't find it.
Well, you know, I thought I had uploaded one yesterday. In fact, I know I did. But for some reason, it wasn't there last night. And I didn't go back to look. But I didn't see it after I looked at the end of the show. It was like, where did it go? And I did the search feature, and I couldn't find it. So.
All right. Yeah, I just had it listed as something else, actually. So play this. Back in spin.
Don't worry, child.
And welcome back to the second hour. And looks like we already have a caller. You back, Dave?
I'm back.
All right, so 715 area code, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hey.
Pleased to hear from you.
Hey, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Olaf, Minnesota.
All right, so what do you have to share with us tonight?
Oh, you were talking about movies.
Right.
And there are some good movies out there on the planet, but they don't come from Las Vegas or Hollywood.
Hollyweird.
Yeah, I'll tend to watch some foreign movies like Kurosawa type stuff and a bunch of different foreign movies. Well, a lot of them are getting sketchy now.
I like some old Scandinavian movies.
All right,
old
do you
French
have
movies.
Do you want
Ready?
Do you want to share some or?
Sure.
A lot of good stuff comes from the French movies. Yeah.
Green Butchers. It's a Scandinavian movie about making sauce, and it's kind of. And a Sweet Land. It was about a German woman that ended up in Minnesota.
Okay.
It's actually a good movie. And Delicatessen. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've never seen it though.
Oh, that's freaking hilarious. It's subtitled. I mean, most of these are subtitled.
Yeah, and a lot of these movies that just make you feel good inside, you don't see anything like that coming from Hollywood.
That's right. I'm not giving you Hollywood movies here.
Yeah, exactly.
Kitchen Stories is just like beyond funny. It's kind of dry, but it's like a Swede and a Norwegian farmer. And it's pretty funny. It's like IKEA on steroids back in the day in little trailers. That's pretty good.
Even
and then
there's another movie that just came out of Norway. This is more recent. It was like a troll hunter or something.
They're just going around
hunting a troll, and it says like a big nose. And again, had some people yelling about it that it wasn't friendly to our merchant friends.
Yeah, and they give trolls a bad name on the internet and shit. Like trolls are actually like our gods, actually. But
yeah.
And then the mayor of Reykjavik. You heard about that?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
After the banking meltdown, it's a comedian from the Reykjavik, Iceland, and he ran for office, and he did a documentary about his running for office, and he won. It's actually kind of like a happy movie that like comedians can actually run for mayor in Iceland.
That's actually sort of, I think that's sort of based on a true story. There was actually a party in Iceland. They just, like, made jokes and stuff.
It's actually true.
I can't remember the name. Yeah.
But I don't know if that's the name of the movie, but it's something about the guy that ran for mayor of Reykjavik.
Yeah, this was...
And he was a comedian. It was actually pretty entertaining. But.
Yeah, it's actually... they're called Best Party.
I don't know.
In Iceland, but if you look up their campaign videos, it's just like them like making jokes and stuff.
And then they
actually got into a couple offices, and they're taking things seriously now. They do stuff like
when they're throwing all the frickin' bankers in jail.
Yeah, what's Let me read their party platform for you. They have like 13 things there. It's like to help the households in the country. The family is the best thing in society. Governments need to meet the needs and demands of households. An ironclad shield wall needs to be raised around the households in the country. Icelandic households deserve only the best. To improve quality of life of the less fortunate. We want the best of everything for this bunch and therefore offer free access to buses and swimming pools so you can travel around Reykjavik and be clean even if you're poor or there's something wrong with you. 3. Stop corruption. We promise to stop corruption. We will accomplish it by participating in it openly. 4, equality. Everyone deserves the best, regardless of who they are and where they come from. We will do our best for everyone so that everyone can be together on the best team. 5, increase transparency. It is best to have everything above board so that the general public knows what is going on. We say we support that. 6, effective democracy. Democracy is pretty good, but an effective democracy is best. That's why we want it. 7, cancel all debt. We listen to the nation and do as it wishes because the nation knows what's best for itself. 8, free bus rides for students and cripples. We can offer more things than any other party because we aren't going to follow through with it. We could say whatever we want. For example, free flights for women or free cars for people who live in rural areas. It's all the same. 9, free dental services for children and handicapped people. This is something that is lacking, and we definitely want to take part in promising it. Free access to swimming pools for everyone and free towels. This is something that everyone should fall for, and it's the election promise we're most proud of. 11, take those responsible for the economic collapse to court. Felt that we had to include this. 12, complete equality of the sexes. 13, listen to more women and old people. This bunch gets listened to far too little. It's as if everyone thinks they're just complaining or something. We're going to change that. And this is just like their party platform, and they made like hilarious campaign videos, and it actually worked. I mean, this kind of satire and stuff is something to
Is it like satire or is it like honesty?
It's a little bit of both. A little bit of both, really, because they got into some of these offices and they like look at how Iceland, because this was sort of a big thing in Iceland, right? It's kind of a big joke everyone's sort of talking about. And look what they did. They got those ideas out there, and I mean, they are starting to crack down on the bankers, and they're starting to do these types of things, right? And like, if you look at throughout history, like satire has been very important, like in the theater and stuff, right? Like, and they kind of make a mockery of this with like your Jon Stewarts and stuff, but like back when like you wanted to speak to the common people, you make a sort of jokey little play or a little thing like that, and it's very effective. Because people, it grasps people, right? And there's a shining example of that here.
Yeah, we need more of that in this country. You ain't going to see it right now, though.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I appreciate you taking my call. I'm going to go back and listen to some old reruns of Howard Stern.
Okay, right. Have fun with that.
That was a joke.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Okay then. Yeah, bye.
Okay, and we do have another caller on the line here. I'm just going to... Oh, he dropped. We have another caller on the line here. Just 661, you're on the air. Tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, this is Eric calling from Texas.
Hey, Eric.
Hey.
Yes. David,
welcome aboard.
Thanks for calling in, man.
Sure.
What's on your mind, Eric?
It's a good show so far. I just kind of started to listen to it. That was kind of a strange joke. I didn't take it as a joke either.
I think he was playing off what we were talking about before, about like just having the kind of satire and stuff, right? But we were mentioning earlier, like, what do you think about, like, we briefly touched on last week's show earlier, and Dave was sort of wondering what you thought it would look like if these two different sides started going to fisticuffs, as it were.
In the government.
I think, you know, the main thing that is holding our side in the government back is that we have a very deep tradition of civilians running the service. And so they're very afraid that if they take the right steps to to count to counteract the bad side, that the American people won't back them. And so they've had to allow the situation to become so bad that when that happens, the American people will basically say, well, okay, this is not our tradition. It is not our way of life, but that's better than slavery. And so it's kind of in a way, the way the Constitution is the thing that's holding the people back that want to save it. It's kind of a very strange paradigm, but that's basically how I see it and what I've heard from a lot of people that I know in the service is the fact that that's the most serious step that the service could take is to overthrow the civilians. Because that's our way of life. That's like
right.
The ultimate step. And so things, you know, it's just a balancing act, and they just have to wait until they feel that things get bad enough. Unfortunately for us, that means that the hole gets just deeper.
Well, what would happen if say that did occur, and obviously that's just like the last straw, last ditch effort to save the country. You would not see anything like per se the Night of the Long Knives.
No. I mean, it would be much more advanced than that. It would be open warfare.
Okay, could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, they'd be killing each other. So, you know, this is the very thing that held, General MacArthur. When General MacArthur was fired and he came back, he had to actually convince a lot of the other Joint Chiefs and the folks at the top not to overthrow Truman. And Truman was so frightened that he went to Camp David, and he surrounded Camp David with the 82nd Airborne.
I never knew that. That's the first I've ever heard of this.
Yeah, because Truman felt, for very good reason, that the military understood where the civilians wanted to take us. And so it was actually MacArthur himself that basically said, we can't afford a civil war because we're facing a Soviet threat. And if we do this now, they'll just jump on us, which was probably very true then.
Well, you know, Truman was the one who fired him, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. Yeah. And Truman fired him because... MacArthur wanted to nuke China.
Right. He basically wanted to lay waste to the Yellow River.
Yeah, he basically wanted to create a situation to where once they got to the river, they would pretend that they were going to cross into China, drawing millions and millions of troops to that side, and then during the night, we would pull back, and then we'd nuke them. Killing, I don't know, 20 million people to basically let the Chinese know we are prepared to flatten your entire country. At that point, I don't think the Soviets would have gotten involved because they had started to having a falling out by that point with the with Mao. Mao basically felt like he didn't have to take orders from Moscow anymore, that he was his own man, and that's not how the Russians felt.
Well, is there anything else that you could add about the war and the government itself, you know, between the multiple factions? I mean, you know, killing each other, yeah, but, you know, do you have anything else in mind, or do you think it's so complex that there's just no way that it could possibly be predicted?
I would say that the vast majority of the Air Force is on the NWO side. I would say that the Navy and the Marines, since the Marines are a part of the Navy, are on our on our side, and I'd say that the Army is pretty evenly split. I'd say that the CIA, the FBI is split. Secret Service is split. I'd say that,
Well, the DEA was the one who released that report on the Israeli spies over the Internet. Do you think that most of the agencies like that, like you just listed, are pretty much evenly split, or do you think there's any agencies in particular that might be more dominant one way or the other?
I think that the NSA and DARPA are definitely on the NWO side. I think the CIA is probably split 60-40 to the NWO side. There's the way the split occurs is a lot of the people at the top are on the NWO side, and the rank and file people are on our side. I think that's very important because at a point of conflict, we have the greater mass of people, and at that point, the greater mass is not going to follow what the corrupt top is going to tell them. And this is going to be a battle of attrition because basically all sides have the same firepower. You know,
even the side that's outnumbered has the same firepower.
Oh, sure.
Well, they have the more advanced stuff. They have more money, right?
I think at this point, all sides have their own little corporations. They all have their own bank accounts. You know, right after World War II, there was a revolution in the intelligence service because they looked at what the SS did. And what the SS did is they became a international corporate army. They got almost no funds from the German Reich, from the actual government itself. That's what all the camps were for. The camps were there to provide products, and they were selling these products worldwide through Spain, through Switzerland, through Sweden, through Turkey, through any neutral country they could find.
Yeah, Auschwitz is actually a boot factory.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they made a lot of things there. You know, the world's largest synthetic fuel plant was right down the street, and a lot of them worked there. So, you know, they would get on a bus, and they'd go down the road, and they'd work in the fuel plant, and then they'd come back. So, but...
Yeah, they actually made them work. That must have been... That's why they're so pissed off, right?
Oh,
that's exactly... Yeah. I think that line is in that film, The Pianist. You ever see that film?
That. No, I haven't.
Oh, that. Yeah, okay. There's a scene in the film where, you know, the typical evil German officer has all these Jews out, and they're like sweeping the like street, and then the officer goes, "You are now going to engage in an activity you've never done before in your life. Work."
Our government, you're saying, though, is pretty much working on that same principle then, and so, but it's my understanding, though, that a lot of the drug money that's made, which, of course, our government is behind as well, is funding all of this, but our economy, is my understanding, if it wasn't for all these deposits in our banks, could possibly collapse without that.
Well, that is what the war in Afghanistan is about. As you well know, Afghanistan produces somewhere between 80 to 90% of the world's smack. So when the Taliban came in, the Taliban are about purity. And so they don't like people having drugs because that makes social problems, and your body is your temple, and they don't want you to pollute your temple. So they killed all the drug farmers, and they burnt all the heroin fields. And that made, you know, Taddy Bush and the Queen really upset.
Well, you know, some of that has legitimate use, you know, in the medical field. We certainly need opium for that as well.
Yeah, but you can make that. Yeah, but David, you can make that as a synthetic. But my point is that they did this, and they started to do this in 07. This is why our banks crashed in 08, because those trillions of dollars from SMAC was gone, and they had a huge hole in all the bank books throughout the Western world, especially us in Britain. And they had to fill that hole. And the only way to fill the hole was to start selling SMAC again. So the only way to do that was to invade SMAC. I mean, was to invade Afghanistan and start growing it again. I got several friends of mine that are in U.S. MMC. They're kind of in special ops stuff. And their job for the last 8-10 years has literally been living with families that grow heroin. They guard the heroin farmers. They help them harvest the heroin. And then they bring it to U.S. Air Force planes. They stick it on the planes and they fly it over the world. Quite a lot of it is being shipped into Russia through.
I was just going
Jewish
to mention
policy.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is a kind of a warfare that we're basically waging against the Russian people and against Putin. Basically, the Israelis are bringing all these drugs in and just more or less giving it away for free.
Yeah, you're selling firewater to the Indians.
Exactly, right. or blankets with, you know, the flu.
Opium to the Chinese.
One interesting thing Putin is doing now is he's trying to make inroads with the Germans. And this is actually something Bismarck predicted, is that they would eventually form some kind of alliance. But, I mean, he's going in Königsberg, which was former German territory. He said he's going to go take, back when it was like, well, it's like Kaliningrad now, but
yeah.
He said he's going to go take all of Kant's work and make sure that they're all translated into Russian. He's always with Merkel, right? Trying to work things out, and trade's increasing. So that's an interesting sort of thing that's going on behind the scenes, and they're probably not too happy about that either.
Well, what Bismarck actually said is he didn't predict an alliance. What he said is if there were an alliance, that Europe would never have any wars. That basically, yeah, with basically German with German organization and with German work and
technology,
with Russian, yeah, and Russian manpower, no one could stand up to them.
That was somewhat what was going on in Soviet Russia, because even though they had a lot of German scientists too, they had half and we had half. And
I would say that they actually got more than we did. Right after the war was over, about maybe a month and a half, Stalin changed the entire policy towards the Germans. And he told his troops that they were not allowed to bother them, not allowed to harass the girls, couldn't even talk to them. And he offered a very good deal to the Germans at three times the rate of pay of the Soviets, and that they would have all kinds of privileges.
Actually, there was a time there where East Germany was a lot better off than West Germany. Well, not a lot better off, but it was it was better off in a lot of ways.
Well, the thing about East Germany compared to West Germany was the fact that East Germany never denazified itself. Stalin basically took all of the Nazis and just rolled them into his government. I mean, what was the change? The change really wasn't all that big. You just changed the picture on the wall.
Right, and they didn't have the degenerate culture that the West did. Like, didn't have all this stuff
right.
coming in, right? Mm-hmm. That there's actually a lot of Germans who would try to go over because they didn't like all these movies and six Weimar level stuff coming in.
I would say that most of it was due to the pay and to the fact that the Russians were actually treating the Germans somewhat okay, and the Allies were saying, oh, we're now friends, while starving them to death. So, but as far as Merkel and Putin goes, you know, I basically said 20 years ago that eventually Germany will be an ally of the Russians. And it's a very important thing to keep in mind that when Putin started his career in the KGB, almost all of his time was in East Germany. And the Russians kind of make a joke about Putin. They always say he's more German than Russian.
Interesting.
And you have to also keep in mind that Merkel is East German.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so, you know, they have a common culture. They have a common bond. And all of the people in the East German intelligence service that Putin dealt with were basically Gestapo guys, were basically all the old guys in the SS and army intelligence. So, you know, they transferred to him how Nazi Germany ran. What was the organizational structure? And if you look at what he's doing now in his own country, it's not blatant, but there are a lot of similarities. You know, he's basically going around and telling, you know, young kids to have, you know, to get married at a very young age and have a lot of kids. He's paying them to have kids. He's paying them to have an apartment or a house. He's trying to make a stable country as best he can, and this is the number one thing that is holding the Russians back as far as having an aggressive foreign policy is they only have 140 million people. I mean, that's not a lot of people, and I would say at least 40% of those are older. So, you know, he doesn't have a large group of fighting age people. He just doesn't. He can't afford to have a war. And so this is why he's really latching himself to Germany, because Germany dominates all of Europe. And all of Europe knows eventually that the United States is going to fall over because we won't be able to service our debt. So right now it's kind of the calm before the storm. All of Europe is just waiting for us to fall over, because when we do fall over, we're going to have to pull all of our troops out of Europe because we won't be able to afford for them to be there. And Europe is just going to tell us, well, we can't afford to keep them there. So I guess you're going to have to leave. Once our troops leave, Germany's free to do what it wants.
Well, aren't most of those troops there just basically to protect the Jews?
They're there to protect the banking power. Yeah, sure.
And we see that these other like national movements, like we see in Greece, Spain, Italy starting up again. This could potentially be a very important bloc that would come out of almost nowhere. and that's something really interesting as well. You see anything on this nationalist movement front that's picking up any steam behind the scenes, as it were, or what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, let's look in the past. Where did all of the nationalist parties come from? Because Germany, Nazi Germany, was just about the last to come to the scene. You had first the Italians, then the Hungarians, then the Romanians, then the Bulgarians, then the Greeks, then Spain. I mean, almost then Poland. I mean, Poland was a fascist country. It was basically a dictatorship. I mean, so one country after another was fascist before Germany.
Well, that's because Germany was stuck with reparations and control of their government, and they weren't able to do so. But when they finally were able to get something going, it took a secret society like the Thule Society to actually bring in somebody like Hitler. Anyway, go ahead.
Well,
yeah, and if that happens again, like America, I could see that happening again with America being one in Germany's shoes in a lot of ways or something like that.
Well, they're doing
because, like,
us,
if anything, we'd be the last.
Anyway, go ahead.
I mean, kind of in a very kind of an odd way, the Nazis came to power mostly because the Western capitalists and Stalin were playing Germany against both sides. And basically, Hitler took advantage of both sides, and because he got a huge amount of aid from Stalin. They would not have been able to take over if Stalin had not provided them with all that help. And Stalin's long-term goal was basically to use Germany as an icebreaker to basically build it up again, club the living fire out of the West, and then attack both from the rear.
Right.
But what Germany is doing now, I think, now that they've secured the Eastern Front, so to say, with Putin, now what they're doing, look at what they're doing with the EU. They're impoverishing all the ex-fascist countries, Spain, Italy, Hungary, Romania, and they're doing that on purpose.
You're saying that's the Germans that are doing it, not the Jewish bankers. Is that correct?
I would say so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hey, do you remember that line from Iron Cross? And they have that one officer, and they send him home, and they ask him, hey, what are you going to do when we lose the war? And he's like, prepare for the next one.
Yeah. And kind of, well, you know, if you go and you look at the 1942 German economic plan, what it called for is exactly what we have now, which is an EU. And instead of being in Belgium, it obviously would be in Berlin. But
what about the nationalist movements themselves, like he was asking about?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is what the Germans are trying to do. The Germans do not want to have a nationalist movement at home because it attracts too much attention and people are too sensitive to that, opposed to having one in Spain or Greece or Italy or Hungary. So they're building up all of the governments around them to be nationalist. And in doing so, they're taking them out of the French and the British camp, and they're bringing them into the German camp.
So are we going to see a rise of Germany again?
You're seeing it now. I mean,
yeah, I'd like to see them pull Scotland into this, too.
Yeah, and there's an opportunity for that to happen, too.
Because if you get the Scots and Germans together...
I don't see Scotland and Germany together just because the cultures.
Well, even if it's not so much together, but it would take the piss out of England anyway.
Yeah, it sure would.
You know, Britain receives its power because we allow the fantasy to continue. I mean, what does Britain have? Britain's a third world shithole.
Well, they handed us their empire, basically.
Yeah, if you look at anything out of London, it's not that great.
No. I mean, they basically are able to have a strong currency because the United States enforces the rules and laws of the Bank of England. And the Bank of England and the Fed are basically one bank. So... But see, that comes to an end once America cannot afford to have, you know, 7, 8, or how many aircraft carrier groups we have. Once the aircraft carrier groups, we can't afford to fund them, the bank has no power. You know, this bank and our currency is accepted in the world for one reason. If you don't accept it, you become a Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, exactly. We project our military power.
You know, and so once we are no longer able to afford that, the whole currency thing is screwed. So, you know, this is why if you look at what the Russians are doing, they're buying gold. They're buying something like $250 million of gold a month.
And the Chinese as well, right?
Yes. But, you know, China, I think China's going to have a civil war. China's government is
just
like ours.
I saw that as well.
Yeah.
There's like a young nationalist movement there. Like, there's, like, once they saw the intellectuals, right? But now they're starting to reemerge, and that's interesting because I can see that causing some strife in the future.
Well, they're more national socialists now than they are communists.
I agree. Yeah.
That's true.
But
well,
they're like that for a reason, because they sort of had to appease the nationalists.
Right.
I think it's going to come to a point where you got the old Red Guard, and you've got these people who are sort of the national socialists. And I think it's going to come to a head over that a lot.
And what about the Russians buying gold there?
And then it's the cities against the peasants as well there.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, China has a lot of problems. And, in fact, they just arrested the second in charge. They arrested a large majority of the security services. They just arrested a lot of the generals because they were going to have a coup.
Wow.
And the failure of this coup is what's going on in North Korea. Basically, the old commie guard is trying to tell the United States and the West, don't attack us right now while we're vulnerable, or we're going to release our mad dog, which is North Korea. And really, Obama is doing everything he can to help the commies in China stay in power. If China falls apart, it's going to be an ethnic war, because you have to keep in mind that China is a ethnic country that's dominated by the Han, and the Han think of themselves as a separate race from all the different chinks, and they basically are Nazi. They basically say, we are the superior Chinese race, and there's got to be like 150 or more different groups in China, and all these Chinese groups don't necessarily want the Han in charge of their little world. So when China starts to unravel, and the reason it's going to unravel is some really simple, basic reasons. The rich, the 1%, the people at the top, own 95% of everything. That's kind of a difficult thing to do and say you're a communist country.
Yeah. Well, China is really almost kind of like a United States of Chinese people, or rather a Europe that actually merged into a federation like the United States.
China's been one state for a long, long time.
Right, but there's different groups there. There's different types of Chinese, and it's kind of like the Europeans are all white people, but they all had different countries. And the Chinese are similar in that sense. Only what I'm saying is they became kind of like a federation, the way the United States was. So it's, you know, you have Texas, like in Europe, you have France, and then you have New York, you have England and Europe, that kind of thing. That's what I meant.
Sort of, well, but I mean, it's not as clear cut. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say it's just like the Soviet Union. And just like the Soviet Union, the reason you could hold the Baltic states and Ukrainians and Kazakhstan and all these people in the Soviet Union was at the point of a gun. And just like in the Soviet Union, China cannot, through time, hold down nationalism. And basically, they have a lot of problems. They can't feed themselves. We are feeding them. We are giving them hundreds of millions of tons of food a month. The same thing, we are feeding North Korea. Without our aid, the whole thing unravels. So basically,
we've been doing that for the communist world for years. That's really not necessarily anything different. And don't forget what you were saying, too, earlier about Russia buying gold. I'd like for you to continue on that, too.
Well, you know, they don't necessarily need to buy it because they have the largest gold mines in the world. And basically, they just, you know, Putin has nationalized all of the gold mines. So basically, all they need to do is just pay the workers to mine the gold, and then they put it into the bank. This is exactly why Stalin built the prison camp system, and exactly why he made all these, you know, laws. You know, if you spit in the street, you go to the gulag, because he paid for the entire military buildup and all of World War II in gold. When the Soviet Union came out of World War II, they had zero debt.
Well, we gave them a lot of military assistance, too. I mean, we shipped tons and tons of equipment over there.
Yeah, we sent a lot of engineers, too, and no one ever talks about that. And they built a lot of factories.
I mean, that is true. But the fact of the matter is, Stalin built the largest army in the history of man over the 20 years before the war started. That was all paid for in gold.
Okay.
You know, so they were at a huge advantage coming out of World War II because they had no debt, and they had more gold. They had a lot more gold. In fact, in Siberia, they just found a deposit of diamonds that has something like 2.5 trillion carats.
Well, then what were you implying then about Russia buying gold?
Russia is buying the gold simply because it's not putting it on the market.
Okay, driving up the price.
Well, that and it keeps it out of the hands of Tel Aviv, right?
That too.
Well, you know, who are the three biggest countries in the world buying gold? China, India, and Russia. India buys the most gold in the world. They have the most gold in the world.
Hmm.
What do you see in India? Do you see India playing a role in the future? Or are they just trying to play it safe?
The Indians are pretty smart. They really dislike the Chinese. They really dislike the Pakistanis. So I would not doubt it if China goes into a civil war, if they say, okay, now's our time. We won't have a better time than now. And they'll probably try to, like, invade the border areas of China. They'll probably attack Pakistan. They'll probably go into Burma because they feel that they should own all of Southeast Asia. And they are ruled by a Hindu nationalist party for all intents and purposes is Nazi. They are a Nazi Hindu party. They're very aggressive, and they have no problem with taking millions of casualties for the greater goal of winning.
Yeah, what people don't know is that in Asia, like India and China, they all love the Nazis, right? That they respect the hell out of like Hitler and the Germans and what they did in World War II and all that, and they all think it's great.
They're more aware of your problem too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh
in
yeah.
Fact,
in China, the protocols are big seller apparently.
In fact, in Korea, Singapore, Vietnam. In Thailand, you actually have Nazi theme bars where, like, you can go out to, like, a bar, and it's, like, a Nazi-themed a disco club.
Yeah, it's a big fashion trend over there as well. Like, you see people normally, like, if they have, like, a, you know, like one of these conventions, you'll be hard-pressed to go to one and not find a Nazi. And in Japan, they have, like, Adolf Hitler comic books. They have Mein Kampf in comic book form. Actually, I have it translated online if anyone wants to look it up. But, I mean, it's pretty popular over there.
Well, you know, you have to keep in mind that the swastika for them is a symbol that they've always had. So,
right.
And there it means good. So, you know, they don't have the social problem. They don't have the propaganda and, like, all the nonsense that we have.
Yeah,
so,
the stigma.
Yeah. So, I mean, for, like, them, it's, you know, it's a very easy switch. Not
and it wasn't easy for them to do that because, like, that should appeal to us more than them, right? But every single movie, every single news show, they sneak something in there that's going to make you hate them, right?
Well, I mean, as far, you know, I've told David this quite a lot. You know, we on the white right have no one to blame but ourselves. We were totally in charge of our country. We were totally in charge of Western Europe, and we basically allowed the Jews to take over. You know, they didn't take over by force. We basically said, oh, well, things are great, so I'm going to go to the beach. And while we were at the beach, they were working hard.
That was just like in the 1970s when all of the baby boomers were into sex, drugs, and rock and roll. All of the a lot of the Trotskyite Jews turned conservative and rediscovered Judaism.
They pretty much always do. They'll be Bob Hoskin when they're younger, and then they'll grow up to be Ben Bernanke, right?
Right. Yeah, they moved from leftist Jews to right Jews.
Mm-hmm.
But
we still have that
problem though between the two groups fighting each other, and we're just stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
So,
you know.
What kind of advice would you give to just regular people, people who might be listening to the show, about certain measures that we could take or we should work towards?
Well, there's two parts of that. There is what do you need to do as a person? And that is the first thing you have to do is walk outside and say, when the shit hits the fan, is this a safe place to live? And I think that's a gut reaction. I mean, you either know or you don't. And if you don't live in a safe place, then the first thing you have to ask yourself is, what do I need to do to move to be in a safe place? And you have to locate a safe place. And, of course, the longer you live in a safe place, the better, because you're more familiar with it. In the places that you do live, I would say it's very important to get involved in the town or the community that you're in so that people know you. So that the sheriff knows you and town government knows you and you're not a stranger. So when it hits the fan, you know, you're not a newcomer and you have an organization that you can fall back onto. Now, as far as on a national scene, what I'm doing is I'm trying to come up with an idea. It's not a finalized thing yet, but I'm thinking 501c3s. Are a very important thing that the right is not involved in at all. And I'm trying to come up with a way on how the right can use 501c3s to help us fund what we want to do. You know, it was Frederick the Great said,
like the leftists are doing.
Yes. And, Frederick the Great said, it doesn't matter how big your army is, and there's no heroism in fighting if you have no supplies.
Right.
And that's basically where we are. We have no supplies because in our world today, supplies is money. And the right has completely left the economy of this country. And that's why we fell. we allowed the Jews to take over the economy, and that's we were displaced. We allowed ourselves to be displaced. So how do we get back into the game? We get back into the game, I'm thinking, through some kind of a coalition, and I'm working on this, to start 501c3s, because we need to take our tax dollars that's going to Washington and redirect it to either ourselves or the town that we live in. And we need them to pay for it. So, you know, the way the tax law is written is a real simple world. You're going to pay someone. So you're either going to pay them or you're going to pay yourself. I
and
say
if you pay
we
them,
pay ourselves.
And if, yeah, because if you pay them, you're paying for your own demise.
Exactly. And so we've been paying for our own demise since 1913. We need to stop paying for our own demise and use the laws and the vehicles that are there in the law, like a 501c3, to fund things that are good for us. It's just that simple. You know, they're giving us all these choices. The problem is we're not taking action to involve ourselves in saving ourselves, and we either change that or we die. You know, I forget the, I think it's Schroeder, I think it's the guy's name, who is the head of the Bin Laden unit for the CIA. And this guy basically says no country, no people has the right to survive. You're either going to defend yourself and live, or you're going to die off. And that is absolutely 100% correct.
So we just basically take the same tactics that the left is doing and use it to our advantage by doing it ourselves. So what would your take be on the shit hitting the fan here?
I'm sorry, you were breaking up on me.
Okay. Basically, I was just saying that we just basically take their same tactics and we do the same ourselves, and that, by the way, which is within the law. And what would your take be on shit hitting the fan here, as you described earlier?
The shit hitting the fan, I mean, that could happen for a lot of different reasons. It could happen because of an economic collapse. It could happen because the administration is trying to push the military into some kind of a final war that basically the military knows that if we fight that war, it's the end of the country. And they're put in a situation of either fighting the war and dying or rebelling and living. So
well, let me throw this at you. My thoughts are this. I think enough people in this country have started to figure out what's going on, and they're going to try and pull one more false flag like 9/11 on us, and the people are not going to buy it. They're going to look at their TV, and they're going to laugh, and they're going to say, this is crap. And then where do we go from here?
Well, you know, David, I think you're right. The only way that they can pull off what they want to do, as far as I'm concerned, is having a 9/11 style attack, but it will be with like a suitcase nuke, and they'll take out some small little town like Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Right.
Des
Moines, Iowa, or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to miss Cheyenne, Wyoming. If you live there, I'm sorry. But my point is, what they need to do is draft every fighting age person out of this country and get them out, and then bring foreigners in.
What do you think you could convince the young people of this country to go if they were called?
I think a lot of them would go because they're stupid. And
unemployed.
Well, I mean, that is definitely one of the reasons why they're focusing on having no jobs for the young people, because the army is the only thing that's left.
That's true. And they're lowering their standards too to let them all in.
They don't have any standards, David. They'll take pretty much anyone they can get a hold of. But, you know, that is the only way that you can take this this country out. The country has to take itself out. We've had Abraham Lincoln has said that. Lots of other presidents have said that basically the only thing that can take us out is ourselves. And we cannot allow ourselves to have that occur. Now, let's say that there is a false flag, there's a draft, and lots of people in the service, like I'll take myself for an example. My family on my father's side has been in the Marine Corps since some point between the Revolution and the War of 1812. When it was my turn to go, both my grandfather and my father said, no, you're not joining, because being killed for the fourth quarter of, you know, GM is not a reason to die. So you're going to have a lot of parents now that are going to say just that. No, you're not going. So that's going to cause a conflict, because eventually the Army is going to come looking for these people. And at that point, you have a choice. You can either join the Army or go to prison. And I'm thinking we're going to have a lot of people that are going to have a third choice, which is, if you want a war, let's have one on our front lawn, shall we?
Yeah, that's true.
And
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and so once you have millions of families having their own personal war on their front lawn, maybe involving their neighbors, you know, in a lot of these small towns where these kids come from, the entire extended family lives in that town. What is the reaction of the Army and law enforcement when people really say no? Because at that point, their choice is, well, I live here too. I mean, Do you, as someone in the National Guard, do you really want to arrest the people of your own state?
Well, that's, you know, like trying to collect guns, same thing, yeah.
Yeah, sure. You know, and if you look at a lot of the Confederate generals and what they said, the vast majority of them were Union people. They wanted a union. They did not want to leave. Okay? And the number one thing they said that made their choice was, you threatened my home state, you threatened my neighbors.
Yeah. It's like Lee said that Virginia was his country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you can just go through almost every single one of them. You know, General Forrest was a Union man. He did not want to leave. But when they threatened to invade Tennessee, he said, well, now you give me no choice. And so,
yeah.
I mean, and it's general after general after general. Really, President Lincoln, by doing what he did, caused his own problem, which, of course, we all know that's what he wanted. But it's the same thing here. The only way they can get rid of the Constitution is to destroy it the way it came in, through fire. It was born in fire. It's got to go out with fire, because there's no way, in a legal way, that they can go and vote and say, we don't want the Constitution anymore. I mean, how does the debtor, the House, the Senate, and the Supreme Court vote to get rid of the creditor, which is the people and the Constitution? You can't legally do that. You can amend it. You can change things, but you can't get rid of it.
Or a con-con.
Even in a con-con, David, I don't think you have the legal authority to get rid of the entire thing.
We're down to a little over a minute left.
Okay, well.
Did you guys want to go over in the archives a little bit?
It's fine with me. What about you, Eric? Do you want to stay on with us? Go a little overtime?
I will stay on as long as you need me.
Okay, great.
So
what about a constitutional convention? That would be one way of getting rid of it.
Wait, you guys go ahead. I just need to step out for a second.
All right, go ahead, Eric.
I think it is exactly what I just said, which is the part of the Constitution which is, allows a con is to change just a part or a section. It's not giving you the authority to undo the entire thing.
Right, but it, in a con, aren't the rules anything goes? That's how you would get rid of guns.
Yes, but again, it's anything goes to amend the Constitution. That's very different, David, from getting rid of the entire thing.
Okay. What part of the Constitution specifies that the Constitutional Convention would be limited to only amending it versus getting rid of it entirely?
I mean, short of having it right in front of me, I mean, you have my pants down. I mean, I can't go and answer that like off the top of my head. Well, it's
okay.
Section 3, line 2. I mean, I haven't memorized it.
Right, but I just don't recall reading that. But I haven't read the whole thing recently, so you know, I can understand your circumstances. Well, okay, yeah. And so then, based on what you're saying, then let me ask you this: if they were to try to collect our guns, and they realize that they're going to run into problems by doing that,
mm-hmm.
do you think that they would actually try to con to do so to get our guns?
No, I think that they'll have a false flag. They will draft all the fighting age people out of the country.
Well,
how would that?
Go ahead.
Because at that point, you have very few people here left to fight back. I mean, who is going to fight back? Your granny? Some eight-year-old kid in the fifth grade? I mean,
well,
who is going to fight back?
Well, there are more guns than there are automobiles in this country, and I would certainly think that at least half of the population owns these guns. And
okay.
that being the case, most of them are capable and know how to use them and are willing to use them.
Okay, David, but that doesn't mean that if you take a kid that just got a permit to drive a car and stick him in a NASCAR race that he has a chance.
Well, that's true. But at the same time, we would also have to count on the fact that a good portion of the ones that are being directed to take our guns would not volunteer, or rather not, let me rephrase that, they would not be willing to go along with that.
They would be foreigners.
They would definitely be foreigners then, okay. All right, and under those circumstances, who are you thinking it? Because if you think that China is going to wind up in civil war and Russia doesn't have enough people to do anything, then who are these people going to be that they would bring in to try to collect our guns?
I would say probably other members of NATO, maybe Colombia, maybe Brazil, they're basically going to find anyone they can. I mean, do they really care? No.
They certainly don't. They don't care, obviously, and they'll use anybody willing to cooperate. That's a given.
Sure.
Sure.
But
do you think they'd be able to motivate some people to do that?
I think if you are a foreigner and you're from the third world and you're dropped here and you have a chance to rape and pillage through America, yeah, that sounds like a pretty good idea.
Yeah, well, probably so, especially if you're unemployed and you have no real life.
If you come from Brazil and you're just this kid that's in the Brazilian army, you come from the slums, just to go to America sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah. Well, and so when you say perhaps EU, are you actually referring to some sort of a Germanized Europe as your description of earlier?
The situation is very fluid, so there are plans, but you don't always know how those plans are going to take shape. Obviously, David, if the economy here collapses and U.S. troops have to leave Europe and Russia and Germany are able to basically take over, in a political and a economic sense, then Germany is going to try to leave NATO. That's going to be very difficult by itself, because the NATO Charter says once you're in, you're in. You're not allowed to leave ever. And if the people of your country elect a government that wants to leave, that it is the duty of the other NATO countries to invade that country and make sure that they have a government that's pro-NATO.
That almost sounds like Lincoln's concept of what should happen to the Confederacy. You force the states to stay into the Union.
Sure. And it's kind of a funny thing. You know, we all grew up with the Cold War, and we were taught that NATO was there to save us from dictatorship of the communists. Meanwhile, in its own charter, it is a dictatorship. And I believe it was the first guy that was in charge of NATO was a British Brigadier General. I can't remember his name. But he basically said, we made NATO not to keep the Russians out, but to keep the Germans down.
Yeah. Now, that makes sense. Now, let me ask you this. You and I have had some discussions in this area before. You had mentioned in the past that one solution to the problem that exists is that the United Nations essentially was created in order to bring Germany down. And after World War II, there was a treaty with Japan that allowed allowed everything to come to an end, and cessation of conflict and hostility, and Japan was able to resume its own sovereign government. Whereas with Germany, there has never been any form of a treaty whatsoever, and essentially Germany is nothing more than an occupied state and is essentially just a puppet government at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So how
yes.
how is it that if they were a puppet government, would you correlate that concept into some of the things that we have discussed tonight?
Well, this is exactly why they want to do the things that we've discussed. This is why, ever since the end of the war, their way out is being a team player. And by being a team player, they're allowed to get big and strong because they're a team player.
Kind of like Texas, like Texas.
And, well, yeah. I don't think after the Civil War, Texas had this grand scheme to, be free again.
Well, that's true, and its economy didn't pick up until World War II, so.
Yeah. So Germany has never had a peace treaty. It's a lot like North and South Korea. They are still, in a technical sense, at war. So,
in fact, the Third Reich is technically still the legitimate government of Germany. On paper.
Yes. Yes. Oh. And the German High Court has ruled twice, once in 1956 and I believe in it was like 71 or 72, that the Federal Republic of Germany was not the official government of Germany or the official representative of the German people, that it was an occupied government. Germany does not have its own constitution. It still lives under the framework of law which the Allies gave it. And that's why when it came together, when East and West came together, that is why it needed the permission of the U.S., France, Britain, and Russia.
Right.
Because it was still in receivership. And, I have...
receivership from what?
Receivership because just like the Confederacy, basically the Confederate Army gave up. But Jefferson Davis never gave up. Jefferson Davis never signed anything that said, as the head of state, I recognize that the Confederacy has been defeated.
Yeah, but that's because they tried to say that the Confederacy never technically left the Union because they couldn't. However, Germany is a little bit different case. Go ahead and continue. I didn't want to keep you from your train of thought a bit.
Yes and no, because as the war went on, basically what the United States and all these other countries said was that the Nazi regime was a criminal regime and was not the real government. They took over by criminal means.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, this is why Eisenhower, at the end of the war, refused to list German POWs as POWs under the Geneva Convention. I think he called them, like, disarmed enemy personnel.
Enemy combatants.
Yeah, that he had several terms for them. He had, like, two or three different terms for them. But
the
main
point is,
they had
even bragged about killing a million German POWs in the span of about 3 weeks at one point.
Yeah. Yeah, he killed somewhere between 3.5 million and 4 million German POWs. And the way he did that is he just put them in these giant camps with no housing. He didn't feed them, and he basically starved them to death.
And they made no distinction. So, they made no distinction either between the SS or the Wehrmacht either, right?
Not really, no. You know, the SS was categorized as a criminal organization. At first they tried to deal with them in a more severe way, but it was General Patton that basically came and stopped that. And he basically said, you know, look, most of the SS guys that we have now were drafted into the SS. They didn't join. You know, they're not in the SS because of some intellectual or, a political reason. They're there because they got a notice. And so he actually got in real big trouble by saying
making
there's
that
no difference.
Yeah.
Well, he actually said there's no difference between a Republican, a Democrat, or a Nazi. They're all the same.
Okay, well, what about the fact that Hitler was elected in the Nazi, and he was a member of the so-called, I don't want to use the word Nazi, but he was a member of the Nazi Party. And the party itself came into place when Hitler came into place, and that was done through the democratic process. How do the Allies justify referring to them as a criminal organization? And then how would that relate in any way to any other things that we've discussed?
How does the United States and the West get away with calling Hamas a criminal organization?
Well, wasn't Hamas created by the Israelis themselves? It was one of those two.
Yes, that's what I thought. Yes, but my point is, Dave,
can't counter Arab that.
They had an election. They had an election that was paid for by the United States. George Bush paid for the election, and when Hamas won, his first statement was, "This has been a free and fair election. I am congratulating Hamas." And of course, once he said that, then AIPAC reminded him who's boss, and he came out the next day and said, "This is an illegitimate election." So, you know, the West doesn't give a rat's ass about voting or the will of the people. It's
the
about power.
It, right.
Yeah. They don't care. You know, it's just a game. It's a mask that they hide behind.
And Israel's the biggest hypocrite with this. They don't even have a constitution or anything like this. They're like this in this limbo of a country.
Well, I mean, Britain doesn't have one either, you know. So, but
right,
you know,
they have a long history to base their laws on. So,
that is very true. But you know, my main point is that the West will do whatever the West needs to do to win, and this is a very big distinction between them and us. We are always concerned about doing the noble thing, about being having chivalry, about being right. And they only concern themselves about one thing, winning.
Yeah, Aryan values versus Jewish values.
You know,
they tried to breed this out of us as well. So I don't necessarily think this is a negative thing per se, but
I think the Aryan world just has to have a very simple idea, and that is the people within our own people that play by the rules, we play by the rules. The people outside of our circle, there are no rules, and the number one rule is you win.
Yeah, we need berserker chivalry, I think.
And that's why one of the reasons it helped bring Germany down, aside from the fact it was outnumbered so badly.
Yeah,
Germany was honest. Germany was honest.
Yeah, look at all of the executive orders that Hitler wrote. He wrote an executive order that Germans could not use silencers because he felt that was cowardly. And
right, I went over the German gun laws on one of my shows, by the way.
Yeah, so this was like when the SS paratrooper Otto Sarkeesi wanted to free the Duchy from the castle. He had to have written permission from Hitler himself to use silencers, which is kind of like crazy because the British put them on almost every gun they had.
You would think that any specialized military team would have that ability to do that without having to ask permission from the upper levels.
But see, this is the insanity of what I'm trying to say, David. We are so concerned about being on the right side, being chivalrous, doing the right thing, that it gets in the way of actually winning. Look at how General Lee would fight. General Lee was so concerned about doing it in a proper fashion, being a gentleman on the battlefield. And that's great. But, that doesn't do you much good if Richmond's being burned.
Well, he did invade Pennsylvania, and it should have been a defensive war, but he took the initiative and went on the offensive.
Yes, but my point is he was so focused on all the time being a gentleman. Meanwhile, Sherman is burning the entire country to the ground.
Yeah, that's true. Very valid point there.
Okay, and look at what Germany had. Germany had more nerve gas. They invented all kinds of gas, sarin gas. I think they invented the precursor to VX gas. They had if our troops came into the beach, if they had just lobbed gas onto the beach, they would have killed the entire Allied army.
That's true.
But Hitler wrote executive orders saying they were never to use any gas at any time for any reason. Well, my question is, why do you have 500 million pounds stockpiled? What was that for?
Well, that's a good question.
Okay, why, when the scientists came to Hitler and said, we can build an atomic bomb, he said, that is inhumane. And he wrote an executive order that even if they could do it, they're not allowed to do it.
Do you think they did it?
They did do it because the first atom bomb to be exploded was done on an island, I believe, off of Estonia. I believe it was in November of 1944, and they did it there so that the Russians could see it, and the Russians informed the Germans that if you use this on us, when we get to Germany, we will kill everybody.
Was done against Hitler's orders then?
Pretty much lots of things were done against Hitler's order. Look at the MP44. That's the first real assault gun. And they could have built that gun very early on in the war, and they showed it to Hitler, and he said, this will destroy the marksmanship and the chivalry of battle. And he ordered them not to make that gun.
Well, didn't Hitler make a distinction under the Barbarossa campaign about going into the Soviet Union, that because the Soviets were not part of the Geneva Convention, that things would be handled differently there?
Yes, but David, that doesn't affect what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is he is making decisions about the equipment of his own troops. I mean, this is like if your troops have swords and someone comes to you and says, hey, I've got a machine gun. And you basically say, no, we don't want to use that because that's not chivalrous.
It's like his decision at Dunkirk.
Yeah. You know, clearly anyone that knew the British know that the only way you're going to defeat them is to kill every single one of them. They're just not going to give up. Now, let's look at what happened because he allowed the British troops to get off the beach. They basically took all those troops, shipped them to Egypt, where they became the Eighth Army and caused a real problem. And because of that, that's why he had to send Rommel and all those extra troops to Africa. That was a result of the decision at Dunkirk. And because the Brits won in Africa, they had a toehold going into Sicily and then Italy.
So going into Egypt had nothing to do with Mussolini's failures. In Africa.
Well, I mean the Italians started to lose basically because the Eighth Army shows up. Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, still, you know, the Italians had awful equipment. They had really bad tanks. Their guns were from the First World War. They were just really outdated. They had some very, very good planes, but, you know, the British were turning out tanks like no tomorrow. And
they didn't have anything near to the organizational skills of the Germans as well, right?
Well,
and also,
you know,
too, we had Lend-Lease from the United States as well, so
well,
that began,
you know,
before we entered.
The thing that really kicked the Italians in the ass was that Mussolini refused to use his fleet. He had the third largest surface fleet in the world, for the world. He built all kinds of battleships, cruisers, I mean, really nice ships, huge, beautiful ships, and he was afraid to use them in battle because he didn't want them to be damaged.
Were they blue water?
Oh, yeah, huge.
Well, they would have came in handy.
And so basically what happens is he orders the fleet to stay in port, and the British aircraft carriers come and they sink the vast majority of the entire Italian fleet in port. The Italians had a Pearl Harbor several times.
Oh,
okay. Well, I do know that the British attacked their navy at least several times, and of course the British ruled the ocean at that time.
Right, but you know, now think about this. Think about what if Hitler had captured all the troops at Dunkirk? The British would have had absolutely no reserves at home, no tanks, no artillery, no nothing.
And all their equipment gone. Completely.
All their equipment is gone. What if you then immediately turned around and helped the Italians to take Egypt and the entire Middle East, because you could have done that very, very quickly, especially with the close relationship between Hitler and the main Islamic guy in Jerusalem.
You had Bose in India, right? And
mm-hmm.
they probably could have made even inroads with Chiang Kai-shek.
Maybe. No, because they had already made that decision when the Japanese first invaded. The Japanese forced the Germans to make a choice because Germany had a lot of advisors in China.
Right. They were over there training the nationalists before the war. Yeah. And, of course, Japan entered into the actually invaded China, you know, years before anything actually happened in Europe. So this was shortly after the Hitler came into power. That didn't last very long.
I think Japan might have been actually, they might have predicted that there was a communist movement swelling in China, and they were just after fighting Russia. And I mean, they might have thought it was sort of a self-survival method because they didn't want to be surrounded by Reds.
No, I think it's, you know, the Japanese had a supremacist ideology as well.
Right.
They basically thought of the Chinese as a bunch of animals, and they just wanted land. They just wanted to expand, and they wanted an empire, and that was their traditional enemy.
And natural resources.
Yeah, natural resources, tons of slaves, you know, and that was just a natural thing for them to do. So, but in the end, you know, they didn't have the population to carry through with the weight that they had on their shoulders. So,
well, this has been a very interesting conversation. It's almost half at the bottom of the hour here. Are we about ready to wrap this show up?
We've been going for a little while now. Eric, it's been great, man. We'll have to bring you on periodically every once in a while to check in.
Sure, no problem.
Dave, any closing comments?
No, I think we've had a very interesting evening here, and we covered a lot of topics, and I think we didn't quite actually anticipate this turning out to be as good of a show as it actually did turn out. And thank you, Eric, for calling.
Sure thing. Well, y'all have a good night, and I guess I'll let you go.
Yeah, these off-the-cuff shows work out pretty well sometimes, or sometimes they don't do very well at all, but you know, I kind of like that format sometimes, right?
Thank you very much, Eric.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks,
bye.
Eric.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks to you as well, Dave.
I'll play
us out with something here.
All right, Lou, we'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, man, stay in touch.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. All right, I'll just find something good here. All right, thanks for listening, guys, and have a good one.
southbound train. Girl, I'm leaving on a southbound train.